Hey, it's Andrew Klavan, and this week's interview is with Ann Coulter. Now, I should say up front that I think Ann Coulter is not just a terrific political writer. I think she should be in anthologies of great American political writing. She's written, I think, 747 New York Times bestsellers. It's 13 New York Times bestsellers. It has to be some kind of a record. She now runs the excellent Unsafe Substack, which is a font of information. Now, I know a lot of people are angry with Anne because she loved Trump and then she hated Trump. And one of the things I happen to love about Anne is that she doesn't care if you're angry at her because she's going to tell you what she thinks no matter what. She does it to the left. She does it to the right. And I think that is a sign of her integrity. And it's great to see you, Anne. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. It's so great to see you. And as I told you, I've been reading some of your fiction books. And man, they are good. Since Andrew won't promote himself, you should all read his fiction books. They are the best mysteries you've ever read. Okay, go.
Well, thank you. I've been learning to promote myself. My audience has yelled at me for not promoting myself. Now I try to do it as much as possible. So we got to start by talking about Trump, because I know that's what everybody thinks about. In my audience, will probably be thinking about. You loved him. You hated him. You said you he'd be elected. You predicted he would be elected or had a good chance of being elected on Bill Maher while they laughed at you. I love when they laugh at you, Bill Maher, because then I know you've got it exactly right. And then you wrote this whole book saying you love him, and now you've been just picking him apart. Why are you such an evil person?
You know, a lot of the same people who hated me in 2000, not just 15, but 2000, or rather not 2016, but 2015, for supporting him, because I supported him right away. Everyone forgets that the other 17 candidates running against him were all open borders, every single one of them. Mm. I mean, he has sort of changed the Republican Party at least that much, that they know they're supposed to pretend not to be for open borders. Rubio was promoting amnesty. Cruz was promoting his own version of amnesty, which is don't let them come illegally, but we'll bring just as many of the exact same people. We'll just do it legally. Great. You still have all the effects. Anyway, that's why I supported him, even though, you know, I grew up in Connecticut. I knew he was an absolutely horrible person. And if you read my book, In Trump We Trust, I wouldn't take it back. I'd write it again. And I make it very clear. He's an awful person. This is a one-time exception because immigration is the only issue that matters, and he's going to build a wall. When I was asked by liberal journalists during my promotion of In Trump We Trust, you know, some of them would say, oh, he's not going to build the wall. And Andrew, I'd laugh at them and say, no, he's got to build the wall. He may not do anything else. But if he doesn't build the wall, he's not going to get reelected. He didn't build the wall, didn't get reelected. So anyway, I was giving him, I think, constructive criticism when he was president, encouraging him to build the wall. And I'm sorry, I was right. We wouldn't be seeing what we're seeing now if he had built the wall. If you don't have the wall, any Democrat can come in, open it up, and we get 10 million basically criminals, insane people, and poverty-stricken people from utterly dysfunctional cultures, and they're just going to turn our country into that dysfunctional culture. So that's why I loved him. That's why I hate him. And man, am I depressed about this election.
Well, I'm going to ask you about that too. But I just to stick with the immigration thing for just a minute. First, did Trump fail to build the wall because he was Trump, or did Trump fail to build the wall because he was stopped, do you think?
No, he had 2 years with a Republican Congress. He signed omnibus bill after omnibus bill. And, whoa, we got tax cuts for the rich. Sorry, I know that's a liberal talking point, but tax cuts, I'm all for tax cuts. I don't want the government to have the money. That is so not the most important issue anymore. And Republicans think it's the entire raison d'etre of their party is tax cuts. So I get a little fed up with it. He signed spending bills that specifically didn't allow any spending for a wall. And in fact, the last one, I think, forbade him as commander in chief from protecting the United States borders. So, you know, then we lose the House, I guess the Senate and the House, I don't know. But we lost Congress. We had both houses for his first 2 years. And, you know, that's when he suddenly starts pretending he wants to build a wall. Even during that 2 years with a Democrat, I think it was House and Senate, and then we got the House back. Anyway, he could have built the wall. I just had this argument with Representative Thomas Massie, one of my favorite congressmen, on my Substack. In fact, I just posted it about an hour ago. The president does not need emergency powers. He doesn't need an omnibus bill to build the wall. He's commander in chief, and protecting the United States of America is the number one job of the commander in chief. There's other stuff he has to do, like, fight off pirates and rescue Americans abroad. But numero uno is protect the United States of America. And I mean, there's a weird thing going on. We're so used to the commander in chief being able to deploy troops, in Syria, Ronald Reagan in Grenada. I guess there was some kind of war resolution for Iraq. I don't know that it was to stay there for 20 years and paint George Floyd murals. But we're so used to the president being able to fling troops around the globe that, he can protect our border? Whoever thought of that?
Why? What is this thing? I read the Wall Street Journal, has some great writers in it, but you are not allowed to write in the Wall Street Journal that we should close the borders. I mean, they will not. What is it with the Republican Party and the borders? Why do not they not get it? And as you say, you did give Trump some credit for changing the direction of the party on that and on China, which I think is fair. But what is it with them? Why don't they understand that this is an invasion?
I've always hated the Wall Street Journal for this reason, and they've hated me. I think because they're representing corporate interests. And, as I say in Adios America, the rich are like sharks. It's all appetite, no brain. They just figure, if I can make an extra dollar this year while, the middle class is paying for it, it'll wreck the country. Every politician going forward will be Chuck Schumer. But that's tomorrow. I don't have to think about that. Well, no, you're wrecking the country for the stuff you care about, too, like regulation and taxes. And as you know, Andrew Klavan, look at California.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I mean, it's a disaster. And, so let's talk about this election. I mean, first, before I ask you that, are there any politicians that you really like? You were talking about Massie, but he's kind of a libertarian, right? He's sort of.
Well, that's what I attacked him for. I was dying to have him back on because we were too nice the first time because I do really like him. So I told him I wanted to have him back on to argue with him about the things I disagree with him on. And it was really funny because his staff kept, luckily I was just out and about, but his staff kept hysterically calling my producer, demanding to know if there were going to be any trick questions, whether I was going to attack him. And my producer gets in touch with me and I said, tell them to settle down. He's smarter than I am. I just argued with him about the two issues I do disagree with him on, which are immigration and drugs.
Yeah, that's right. The libertarians, they love those drugs. I know. I don't even know how they ever show up for interviews. I mean, it's all weed, weed, weed. That's all they care about. Yeah. So it looks like it's going to be Trump Biden. I simply do not believe that Biden's going to make it to the election. I simply do not believe he will be the candidate. I don't think that guy can crawl that far, but that's what it looks like right now. What are you thinking when you see this? If Trump were to win, would he be a better Trump, a worse Trump, a different Trump?
Well, I mean, I guess that's the question. I think the people supporting him, if they think about this at all, are assuming that. Because he's saying the same things now, except really not in as smart a way, I think, as he did in 2016. He's making the exact same promises. So why do you think he's going to do it this time? I suppose there's an argument that, since he fell flat on his face his first term, he's figured out how to do it this time. Or the alternative possibility, which scares me, which is why I wish he weren't our nominee, he has always really wanted the New York Times to love him.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
They're never going to. They're never, ever going to. But oh my gosh, does he want elite acceptance? After sites like, Breitbart, I think that was probably the number one site for promoting Trump in the 2016 election. He never gave them an interview. He never invited them to the White House. Every day he called the New York Times is Maggie Haberman. He is so desperate to be accepted by, you know, New York City elites, which, again, won't happen. And if that's the case, if he's not even facing re-election, he could be so much worse. So, I mean, I guess that's what we have to worry about. I do think it's going to be Biden. They're already, as I predicted, they're already gearing up to say Biden is not going to dignify Trump by debating him.
Yeah, but Trump lost that argument because he didn't debate the other candidate. So he can't now accuse him of cowardice. Yeah.
He also lost the debate with Biden in 2020.
He did.
Remember
that? Yep, I do. That was that first one he did because he was actually, there was a point where Trump was too aggressive. It's hard to imagine. I'm not sure where that line is, but there's some place where even the people who like Trump thought, there's a little too much Trump there. But so I was in New York all week and I was talking to a lot of journalists and, you know, people in publishing and things like this. And all of them are terrified that maybe not that this is the end of the Republic leading into like the Roman civil wars, but that violence is on the way. Do you think so? You're nodding.
Things are about as bad as I've seen them. And particularly, yeah. I mean, I'm always, and my friends attack me for this, I'm always, you know, the sunny optimistic one. And I'm having a little trouble being sunny and optimistic now. So, I mean, mostly what I've said is we really have to concentrate on the House and Senate races. The one election I'm really excited about this year is the L.A. district attorney race to get rid of George Gascon.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, if that's the only race I care about, Republicans could be in trouble. But if we can just save the House and take the Senate, I'm all for gridlock. If we can just have 4 years of gridlock, that would be peachy keen. And the violence, you know, it's funny. The violence has been going on a long time, and the hatred for, I would say, in particular, white people on universities, in publishing, in Hollywood. And the funny thing about it is, since October 7th, they've sort of segmented off specifically the Jews.
Yes. Which is funny how bigotry always ends up right there.
And that has woken up a lot of very, very important, powerful people in America. And, you know, we were just saying it's the opposite of that German minister's poem that begins, "First they came for the Jews, and I said nothing." No, they came for everybody else first, and they finally came for the Jews. And now people are waking up.
So I look at some of the cultural stuff going on, that this transing of children, the idea that the president of the United States can defend. I mean, what to me, like I always say, if Joseph Mengele had described gender-affirming care to Hitler, Hitler would have reeled back in horror and said, "Who do you think I am?" You know, I think it's like, that's how ugly I think it is.
Yes.
And then just watching the State of the Union, watching people give standing ovations to abortion, those are the things that kind of haunt me, that, like, you know, when John Adams said our Constitution is for immoral and religious people, I think, like, we're not immoral and religious people anymore. We're actually savages. We're actually like the Canaanites. So why do you think that immigration is the, why is that always the thing? Because that's, you've always been a big, you've always stuck on that point forever, really.
Because, I mean, I describe it obviously in great length in Adios America, but I mean, there are huge cultural differences.
Yeah.
This idea that if we just, you know, dunk immigrants in the Rio Grande, suddenly they will become James Madison. You know, why didn't we do that in Iraq? Just bring them all over here, dunk them in the Rio Grande, send them back.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. And as the founding fathers knew, freedom is a wonderful thing, but it's very hard to learn. I mean, that was one of the things I by and large hated Senator Katie Britt's response last night, but the one thing I liked, and she does have to drop the Katie. You're an adult. We don't have
she doesn't
Senator
sound like
Timmy.
An adult. Yeah. Yeah.
But the one thing I liked was when she was talking about, it's in our DNA. We're the people who threw back the most powerful empire in the world, the British Empire. We're the people who conquered the West. We're pioneers. We have the DNA of the people who landed a man on the moon. And you know, I tweeted, I don't know, last night when I woke up in the middle of the night, no, what's this We, you know who doesn't have that DNA? The newcomers, as we're calling them. And look, we can assimilate people, but A, we're not trying. B, we're not getting the best stock to be assimilating them. Our immigration policy ought to be, I love this argument about how many of them are criminals. How about zero? Zero immigrants, legal or illegal, should be criminals. We ought to be searching the world and getting the cream of the crop. And that is what America used to do without even trying, because we didn't have a welfare system. So as I hope you know from reading Adios America, 30% of immigrants used to go home because they couldn't make it here. There was no warm bath of welfare benefits and housing and medical care that they would soak in. In places like Vermont, there were these, I think they were called call out letters, where you couldn't just walk from town to town. If a new person came to town, they would send out, you know, the town elders. And if you couldn't support yourself, they'd tell you, keep moving, buddy. So now we're getting the poorest of the poor, the most dysfunctional, the people who in 1,000 years have not been able to create a stable civilization. So again, why do we think it's going to change here? Mm-hmm. Incidentally, when you were talking about violence, and it has been really, really, really bad, and I say now we have some powerful and wealthy people on our side. And as evidence of that, the first time except Berkeley, that I was shut down at a college speech there. I used to give an enormous number of college speeches. Went back and gave it 2 years later, and thanks to the Proud Boys, was actually able to give it. But November 2022, Cornell students shut down my speech at Cornell, my alma mater. So anyway, I'm going to be speaking there on April 16th. And why? Because the trustees got furious. And I think what they were already furious. I mean, I was running into people at Christmas parties in New York a month later, and that's all they were talking about. But particularly since the crap that's been going on since October 7th, yeah, that has just thrown fuel on the fire to the trustees and to the donors who are ticked off at what's going on in college campuses. So, ha, 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 they're not only forced to invite me to speech, but the guy who's arranging it, I'm Leadership Institute, really? Emailed me today to say it's really fun talking to a Cornell provost claiming, we're really looking forward to having Ann Coulter.
That is a change. You're right. That is a real change. And you're right too that it is October 7th. And you know, I mean, I've been telling my Jewish liberal friends for years, maybe even a decade, that all the anti-Semitism was on the left, that the anti-Semites on the right were nobody. They were on the Breitbart comment page. You know, they were not important people. Where these guys matter. Yeah. So I remember I discovered your writing, which I really do. I mean, I've said this before, but I think it's just terrific political writing. But I discovered it when I came back from England and was suddenly shocked to find that the only people I agreed with were basically the guys at the corner in National Review. And I started wanting to research it. And the first book of yours I read was I think it's called Slander. It's the one about the press.
Oh, that's a good one.
Isn't that a good book? Yes. I'm glad we both enjoyed it. And of course, because the first thing that happens when you go from being a liberal to a conservative is you suddenly realize you've been lied to by people. Yes. And there is actual information. And the people on the other side, one thing every Democrat knows is that the Republicans are evil, they're Hitler, you know. So when you start to realize that's not true, that is a string that you pull and the suit falls apart. But that book, I mean, for years I would recommend that book to people, but now I feel like you would have to go back and rewrite it. The press has become so much worse. And so really it's gone. I mean, the mainstream press is gone. And they keep saying, well, it started with Trump. Like the hell it did. I mean, they were just, that may have pushed them to a new level, but they have been dishonest for a long time. And now they're just they're a Pravda. They're a corporate regime entity.
Yes. I've been thinking recently how many tricks I describe in that book actually is what they're doing now. Because when I wrote that book, that would have been, I guess I wrote it in 1999. And I think it came out the next year. It was a put off. It doesn't matter. And that was before the internet was very big.
Right.
Fox News had no viewers at that point. So there wasn't really the alternative media. We had about a decade of freedom, I think. but they had the same insular monopoly in the 80s and 90s that they are really exercising now.
So do you, that was my question. Do you feel that things have gotten so bad that we're not getting any information, or is the internet still operating as a break? I mean, you have a Substack. I have a Substack. I mean, I think these are real places. I think that formerly Twitter, which is the only thing we can call it because it's ridiculous to change it to X, formerly Twitter. It's a genuine thing. I mean, Donald Trump can get his word out. He's not going to get canceled this time at the election. Which way do you think this is going? Is this going for the good, or is just the mainstream media gone and so it doesn't matter? Or are we just absolutely caught?
I kind of think in the media, and this is probably me just being the crazy sunny optimist, but I think it's going to get better. When you look at what Gemini did, oh, and by the way, I will be suing them for defamation. What they said about me.
What did they say about you?
So if you know any millionaires, I think I need about 2 million. I got the lawyer, really good lawyer. I got the 501c3. I just don't know how to ask people for money. So I'll just do it on your program here.
Okay.
$500,000 and you hate Google. But there has been a lot of pushback with their images, for example. I think people are on to them. There is Elon Musk, though. I'm still shadow banned on Twitter.
Are you?
Yeah.
I think I've been shadow banned on Twitter, too. Yeah.
I haven't. I went from, zero to 2.1 million followers in 7 years, and I haven't gotten one new follower since. That was in 2018.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I gained when Elon Musk took over. I gained like 50,000 followers in a day or 2 days. And since then, it's just been this like trickle. And I just thought, where are the other 50,000?
Yeah. Well, at the time when he was taking it over and everybody knew there was a lot of shadow banning on, I remember that Mark Andreessen said, and I don't know anything about computers, but he said there are a million ways to shadow ban people. It's going to take a month to unravel what Twitter has done. And I think Elon got his post boosted and thought, okay, done.
Yeah. So, but do you feel, you feel this is getting better, not worse?
I guess the getting part, we haven't quite reached that yet, but I do see positive steps. The only people watching TV, and I think it's all pretty bad, including our side, are people over 60, mostly in nursing homes who don't know how to change the remotes. No one under 60 watches TV.
Right.
No one. So it's a little bit harder because it's so diffuse. And I mean, there probably ought to be a way for Substack to let you follow, 10 or 20 people of your choice for a discount rate across all of them. Because there are a lot of people you got to follow on Substack, and at $50 a year, well, it's not as much as cable, but it's still, the price can run up. And if you could combine Substack, because that's where everyone worth reading is right
now.
Yes,
that's right. That's right. I agree. I mean, that is, it's the best source of actual journalism. I mean, it's kind of
so fun. No censorship, no ads.
It's amazing. It's shocking. And people will pay to get good stuff, and they can volunteer to pay, but it's still terrific. One of the things that I've been thinking about recently is I kind of feel we're at this point where the boomer generation is dying off, and that all the ideas that the boomer generation had and their missions have failed. Like that basically the Great Society has been a complete disaster. And on the one hand, and on the other hand, the idea that we're going to somehow repeal the New Deal has also just gone nowhere. And it seems to me, when I talk to young right-wingers, I hear a lot of authoritarianism coming in, especially after 2020 when they saw the riots and when they saw people saying, oh, the riots are mostly peaceful. And they just thought, this is all cosplay. This is all a joke. So I kind of feel that we need a new mission, that conservatism needs a new big vision. Tell me if I'm wrong, and also tell me if there is a big vision. What should we be looking for?
That's a good question. I mean, I think we could both put it together pretty well. And I think it does come out in what people like us and our friends talk about on Substack and Twitter. There's the moral component you talk about. I just read, I think it was yesterday, I think I'm going to tweet it later. There was an article in the New York Times about this amazing twin study. Maybe it's already all over the internet. I've been out today until I came back for this. But twin studies are like the gold standard of scientific research on human beings, obviously, because everything genetically is exactly the same. And they had all these twins where one would turn out great, you know, get married, stay married, have kids, happy life, never has to go to therapy. And the other one totally screwed up. Therapy most of his life, deep depression, could never hold a marriage down. And these are identical twins. And the difference was the screwed up twin had been molested as a child.
Mm. Of course.
So you see that and think about all the things you see on libs of TikTok and what these teachers are doing. And oh my gosh, I just wish we could make DeSantis our ruler.
Yes. Yeah. DeSantis has done a great job. Terrible candidate, I thought. I don't think he would have won even if he'd been a great candidate, but I still think he was not a good candidate.
No, I wouldn't say this at the time because I'm a huge DeSantis supporter. And afterwards, I did write a column, I think gently, saying what the problems were. And I think the number one problem was winning his reelection by 20 points because that made him arrogant and he wouldn't listen to anyone. And then in the nitty gritty, I've said this a million times, we don't want to hear from your spouses. I personally think the China thing is overdone. Nobody goes to sleep at night worried about China. We're worried about the border and illegal aliens, you know, driving drunk into your kids and overtaking your neighborhoods and your emergency rooms. Anyway, no Republican should ever, ever, ever hire a campaign consultant. Some of those lines.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I completely agree with
that. We need or bold campaign consultants. Conservatives.
They should not be paid unless you win. That would be the other thing. Campaign, maybe they get paid minimum wage, but if you win, they get a big bonus. I mean, I think that consultants have killed the Republican Party. They're cowards.
Oh, also that 6-week abortion limit. And I've been doing a lot of Substacks on that. I am a pro-life zealot, but these pro-life zealots who aren't paying attention to election returns are not only going to kill us, they're going to get a lot of babies killed when there is no elected Republican left in the United States of America. There have been like 7 or 8 initiatives in states like Kentucky and Montana, Kansas, states that Trump won by 20 points, and the tiniest restriction on abortion is losing in a landslide.
Yeah, right.
I'm surprised. But you got to, this is the change hearts and minds portion
of our show.
It isn't jam it down their throats.
Yes. No, there's no question that the conservatives always bad on culture. They always go to the culture last. They always realize the culture is how you change hearts and minds, you know, last. They just never think of it. You know, you mentioned China. One of the things I hear a lot on the right is that we shouldn't, the America first, America, the insular America, fortress America, we shouldn't be in any of these wars. Where do you stand on this? Where do you stand on Ukraine?
Oh, absolutely none of them. And as you may recall, I was, and I still would be, it's like in Trump we trust. At the time, I think I was right. Thing has kind of went awry. I was and would be a huge proponent of both the Afghanistan war and the Iraq war. But I and my fellow enthusiasts, for one thing, I'm sorry, we had been attacked on our soil.
Yeah.
And I don't want to hear, oh, Iraq didn't attack us. Neither did Afghanistan.
Right.
It was this wandering mob of Osama bin Laden acolytes who wandered into Afghanistan. He could have launched the attack from any country. So neither of them attacked us. It was terrorism. It's hard to go after terrorism. But I don't think any of us thought, stay there for 20 years.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
That's why I wouldn't do any of them. I mean, obviously Europe isn't terribly concerned with Ukraine. And I don't know, just when I hear Biden at the State of the Union going on and on about Ukraine while our border is wide open, I mean, it's a stupid but obvious analogy. If criminals are breaking into your house, do you stop and start helping them, you know, rake leaves in the neighbor's yard?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's amazing. It was amazing to me. It was amazing. We were all watching it together here. It was amazing to all of us that he started with Ukraine as if that State of the Union depended on Ukraine. And you know, I hate Putin. I think he's a terrible, terrible human being. I worry about this axis of evil, the Russia, China, Iranian axis. I do worry that they're perfectly capable of sitting down together and say, how can we bedevil this country next? But I think that's an interesting idea that the battle is here. The battle is right here first. Yeah, I'm hearing this a lot. So,
And the reason I'm not that worried about China, I mean, I know it's a great country to hate because they gave us COVID.
and those little and dolls that break whenever you play with them. Yeah, right.
They poison our dogs. Yeah, all our crap is made there.
Exactly.
And they steal our intellectual property. Well, there are other things we can do to bring manufacturing home. I have a few ideas. We definitely should crack down on them stealing our intellectual property. I think there are things we can do with that too, but they're never going to actually attack us and they will not seek our destruction. Otherwise, they're not getting their money back.
That's a good point, actually. All right. I always love talking to you, Anne. You've got a really interesting. I love the fact that you just don't care what people say about you. This is one trait we actually share, but I think maybe that's why I admire it so much. Anne Coulter, Unsafe Substack, and it is a terrific Substack. It just if you just take a look at it, you will see the information is thick because you're a great researcher as well. It's always great to see you, Anne, and you can come back anytime.
Thank you. I'd love to. So good to see you, Andrew.
All right. I'll see you again soon. Anne Coulter, her books were central to my formation as a conservative. Some of them still not just well-written, but the research is incredible. Take a look at her Unsafe Substack. And if you really want to get the goods, take a look at the Andrew Klavan Show on Friday. I will see you there.